Iyun Tefillah again means careful study and analysis and introspection, both into the format of prayer and perhaps more importantly our own individual prayers, and trying to always analyze and reanalyze what it is that we are doing and what it is that we're getting out of it. And of course we highlighted the fact that the Torah speaks about the action of prayer, if you will, as being something which is to be fulfilled or performed with one's heart. Emphasizing that unlike most other mitzvos, which can more or less be performed in somewhat of a perfunctory way, if a person is able to follow directions, you know how much matzah you need to eat, you know how to shake the lulav. But tefillah, on the other hand, is a mitzvah which requires one to use his or her heart, which means, of course, it's an emotional experience, which is much more difficult to achieve, much more difficult to regulate, and to even gauge in an honest way how it is that we are doing. It's very difficult. We spoke about the fact that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, in a famous analysis of that which appeared to be a contradiction in the Rambam, explains that there are two different types of kavana. When we speak about kavana in prayer, so we need two things. Most of us typically think of a kavana as being the perush hamilim. What is it that I am saying? What does the word v'lamal shinim mean? So that's one level of kavana. But the more fundamental type of kavana, the one which, as we said, may be ma'akev, which means it would potentially be an impediment for a person being able to properly fulfill the mitzvah of tefillah, is what we call the kavana of a person having an awareness that he's being omed b'fnei Hashem. And we suggested, or Reb Chaim suggested, that if a person comes to shul and davens, even if he understands that which he's saying, but he fails to have that appreciation that I'm standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that's a problem. And we quoted from Rav Ben Ali Shur that said, maybe that's Talmud Torah. You know, not to say that it's a waste of time, but is that really tefillah? Very likely that's not. We concluded by suggesting certain practical ways that people could try to enhance the ability to daven properly, including stopping for a few moments before we daven and reflecting on that which we're about to do. We spoke about the importance of turning off all distractions in our life, and there are certainly many electronic distractions, and you use your imagination. I can't even name them anymore because there are so many different types of things that people can carry around that would ring, beep, call, shake, do whatever else, but these things should be completely turned off before we come into shul, so we don't lose before we even get started. We spoke about the importance of using a sitter that a person is comfortable with, and obviously choosing a place, both in terms of the actual location and a location within the shul, which would be conducive for prayer. These were some of the issues that we discussed last week. We're going to continue tonight discussing three different areas on a more general level, which are designed to enhance and elevate one's kavana in prayer. And with that, which I think will take us through this evening, please God, next week we will begin to really take a close look at the sitter and really, you know, try to do what I think most of us are here for, and that is to come to a better understanding of the Shemoneh Esrei itself. The three concepts that I'd like to speak about tonight are, I'll tell you what they are first, and then we'll talk about one by one. The first one is what's called Smichas Gula L'Tefillah, which means the requirement of beginning the Shemoneh Esrei, or having the Shemoneh Esrei follow, more accurately, a description of the Gula of redemption, which is an important component of prayer. The second one is a concept which we'll call in Hebrew Tefillah B'Lachash, and that is the importance of davening by, on the one hand, enunciating our words, articulating, but doing so in a very, very soft, perhaps even a silent way. And the third aspect I'd like to talk about is the third component of the introductory level to prayer, are the three steps that precede the davening. The three steps forward that a person takes before davening Shemoneh Esrei, we'll talk about this from somewhat of a philosophical perspective to gain better insight as to what it is that we are supposed to be doing when we come to shul to daven. So the first topic again is what we call Smichas Gula L'Tfila. Last week somebody actually in the room right now said, are you going to speak about Smichas Gula L'Tfila? And I said, no. Because I told him, you know, if we would talk about all the introductory topics, we'd never actually be able to begin to look at the Shemoneh Esrei. But after he asked me the question, I thought about it a little more. I said, you know, not that he took it beyond, but I think the question was an appropriate question, and I think I responded to quickly, because it is very difficult to talk about. It's probably irresponsible, frankly, to begin a discussion of Shemoneh Esrei without focusing briefly upon this concept, which is clearly very, very important in the eyes of Chazal. The Gemara in Brachos in the first source tells us that Kore Kriya Shema Umispaula, when a person davens, he should first say Shema, and then follow with the Tfilas Shemoneh Esrei. That's obviously the format in the morning and in the evening as well. Tfilas Mincha, as we know, is sort of an abridged tefillah in that way and does not have a Shema that precedes it. The Sayyele, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this would seem to what support the view of Rabbi Yochanan. This Rabbi Yochanan taught a Zehu Ben Olam Haba, who is literally a person of the world to come, Zehasomech Gula L'Tfila Shel Arvis. This is a person who joins a Gula L'Tfila. He begins davening, focusing on redemption, and then goes into prayer. Rashi over there says, when it says Shel Arvis, which means the evening prayer, it means certainly Shachris. Shachris, we are even more concerned about this concept of Smichas Gula Tfila, because, as Rashi says over there, the Ika Gulas Mitzrayim was in the morning. But before we get into we're not really going to get into the technicalities over here, you may be wondering, what's going on over here? You know, Olam Haba, I don't know what it is, but it's a pretty special place, and clearly there's no such thing as a free ticket. Now, each and every one of us, if we come to shul and we open the siddur and we follow what it says, we're automatically Samech Gula L'Tfila. Is that really what it means? Just be Samech Gula L'Tfila and that's it? I get my Olam Haba? You mean I don't have to worry about anything else? I just have to be Samech Gula L'Tfila? It seems a little strange. Now, we know that sometimes Chazal say things in somewhat of an exaggeratory fashion for emphasis and in order to underscore the importance of a certain idea, but still, I think this leaves us wondering what's going on over here. Rashi goes on to say, the concept of Smichas Gula L'Tfila we find in Sefer Tehillim. And then he quotes Yerushalmi, which tells us a muscle, which I'd like you to think about. It may make you somewhat curious, but let's try to think about what this muscle, the message is conveying. The Gemara tells us, quotes Rashi over here, that one who is not Samech Gula L'Tfila. What would that mean? It means a person who just opens a siddur and starts Shemoneh Esrei without saying the Shema and the brachos beforehand, particularly the one which focuses on Geula, that final brach of Gal Yisrael. You know what that's like, say Chazal? It's like a person, Le'ohav Oshemelech, Shabbat Adafak Al Pischo Shemelech. It's like a friend of the king who comes and he knocks on the door of the king, knock, knock, Yata Melech. So the king arrives to answer the door, Matzo Shehiflig. And the king discovers that the guy who knocked on the door left. He didn't even wait around for the king to answer the door. So Afu Hiflik, so when the king sees that, so he leaves as well. That's the mashal. Very, very strange. Again, a person who daven Shemoneh Esrei but is not Samech Gula L'Tfila, it's like a person who comes, knocks on the king's door, and leaves before the king arrives to answer the door. What should one do? Ella says Rashi, Ye'ad Mekariv HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eilav. A person should try to draw God close to him. Umratzehu B'tishpacho Seklusin Shal Tzias Mitzrayim. A person should try to appease, so to speak, to find Ratzon favor through proper praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'miskariv HaLav, comes close to him. U'v'od HaKariv HaLav Yesh Lo Lutzvot Rachav. And once a person's feeling that sense of proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that's when he asks for what he wants. Again, my question is simply, what's going on over here? Is this really so important? I came to learn about Shemoneh Esrei, and you're telling me that if I daven Shemoneh Esrei without first saying Ga'al Yisrael beforehand, so I've done something so terrible, it's like knocking the door and not waiting for the king to arrive, what's going on over here? And furthermore, just one more question we'll throw in the pile over here. There's a Gemara in Brachos which tells us in source number 3, Amar le Rabbi Gila, Rabbi Gila said to Ula, Ki Ayelis lahasam, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, show b'shlama d'rabruna achai b'mamid kol achabura. He said, I'd like you to please go ahead and ask about the welfare of Rabruna, our brother, in the favor of the entire group. You know, so he was asking him to extend a very appropriate, respectful greetings. Why? He says, "Adam gadol hu v'sameach b'mitzvos." He's a very special man. He's a great man. And he's very joyous when it comes to the performance of mitzvos. And he says, I'll tell you, Zin lecha, the one time, Samach ulu l'tfilah, v'lepasik chucha mipume kula yoma. There was one time I saw that he did that, which we're describing now, Smichas kulu l'tfilah, and I could tell you, he smiled the whole day long. The smile did not leave his face the whole day. What is going on over here? What is the big excitement about Smichas kulu l'tfilah, that this Rav Bruno was smiling all day long? So the person who actually asked me if I was going to speak about Smichas Kulu Tefillah said, and if you're going to speak about it already, take a look at Rav Schwab's sefer, because Rav Schwab talks about it, and I don't really understand what he's saying. I've studied many times, and it's hard to understand. So I'll tell you, I read Rav Schwab, and I did try to understand it, and I took something out of it. I'm not sure necessarily that this is what Rav Schwab intended, and maybe part of what he intended, and maybe there's a lot more. There definitely is a lot more, because I'm only going to share with you a little bit of what he said. But this is what I took from it. And even if it's not exactly what Rav Schwab intended, this is the message I'd like to convey to you tonight. And that is, the concept of Smichas Kulu Tefillah is like this. What does it mean when we say Geula, when we say redemption? Well, what does that mean? So redemption obviously means many different things, different people, different circumstances. But the idea of redemption is, I find myself in a very precarious situation. I find myself in need of someone to save me, to redeem me. And then another, a person who probably has a greater, more power, stature than I do, is able to use certain resources, is able to control the situation, and then, you know, redeems me. That's the concept of geula. And actually, Schwab offers various proofs for this approach. He says, if you look in the Torah speaks about a goel, a redeemer, not only in relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but there are other individuals who help and assist people in times of need, either people in financial crisis, a situation where there's a person who's the victim of a manslaughter. So then the Torah speaks about the relatives who avenge his death as being a Gohel Adam. Basically, a person who can't take care of himself, a person who finds himself helpless, but is then assisted by another who's a Goel. So that is the concept of Geula. And I believe that this is the concept of Smichas Kulu Tefillah, the follows. Very often, when we come to Shul to daven, and this may be subconscious, so if you could relate to this, great, and if you can't, it may still be an experience that you're having, an emotion you're having, maybe subconscious. We feel intimidated in some ways, and perhaps find it hard to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would really, really have any interest in what I have to say right now. After all, God is very busy. He's got a world to run. No? He's got an entire universe to run. He's got a lot going on right now, especially with all that's going on in Olivia. He doesn't have time to focus on Larry Ruflex. It just can't be that God is all that important to me, that I'm all that important to him. And so therefore, if that's my feeling going into prayer, so if I don't really feel that there's anybody who has an interest in what I have to say, so obviously that's going to affect what I put into it. And Geula, focusing on Geula beforehand, you know, really focusing on it, reminds us that that's not so. Reminds us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very interested in us, not only as a people, but as individuals as well. When God reveals himself to the Jewish people at Har Sinai, he doesn't say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem, your God who created the world, which was perhaps the greatest feat of all time. Yesh Me'ayin, right? Creation of the world is the greatest miracle ever. But God says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That I am Hashem, your God, the one who took the time and the interest, who was concerned, so to speak, to extricate you from your captors in Egypt. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us, so to speak, to relate to him in such a way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to understand that, in fact, he is there for us, and that he does want to hear from us. And if a person begins Shmon Esrei without Geula beforehand, so he's almost setting himself up for failure. And maybe this is what the Mashal means. If a person comes and he knocks on the king's door, why is he running away? After all, why knock if you're not going to wait? So probably because he doesn't think that the king's going to really take any time to answer the door. After all, he's a king. He's probably busy. I'm going to knock, but then I become discouraged immediately because after all, he's the king. And if that's a person's attitude, they come and the king opens the door. Nobody's standing and the king walks away. The proper approach, the proper perspective we should have coming into davening in the morning is that I am now going to embark on a certain attempt to solidify a relationship that I have with someone who cares about me. And perhaps again, the greatest obstacle that we have to our own success in prayer is the attitude that we have that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not interested in what we have to say. Perhaps when Chazal say that a person who is so mechgul l'tfilah is a ben olam haba, so Rav Schwab points out that very often when Chazal say someone is a ben olam haba, it doesn't mean that he's going to get olam haba. A ben olam haba means that in this world, he's a ben olam haba, meaning he's living olam haba. It doesn't mean to live olam haba. A person feels constantly connected to a greater being. A person feels connected to the divine. So what it means that if a person is so mechgul l'tfilah, it doesn't just mean you come to shul and you follow what it says in the siddur. But a person who can truly internalize this and feel a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he is my Goel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can redeem me from all the difficult situations that I face in life, whatever it is that I'm going through, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can assist me, and he wants to, so to speak, and he veils himself, Kaviyachol, and he waits for me each and every day to speak to him. So if that's my perspective, and I really internalize that, so that I'm a Ben Olam Haba, that whatever it is that I face throughout the day, I am living this different existence, which is why the Gemara tells us about Rav Bruna, that one day he was so mechgul l'tfilah, that means one day, but there was one day that he achieved such a transcendent perspective within this concept of smichus mechgul l'tfilah, that he was smiling the whole day. He couldn't walk away from that because it was such an enriching experience. It was something that gave him a tremendous amount of chizuk. And a further sort of proof for this approach, this perspective that we should have on this idea of smicha sgula tefillah, is found in a sefer that I have actually in front of me, but I took one piece out for you from the sefer Tefillas Yesharim. And he writes in there, he quotes from another Gemara which talks about smicha sgula tefillah. And I'll say the Gemara outside. The Gemara says there are three things which are, the Gemara calls tekifos, which means three things that we should, that should be adjoined together. One of them is takaf smicha shchita, l'smicha shchita, which means that when shechting an animal for a karban, there should be a smicha beforehand, which means the hand of the bala karban is placed on the head of the animal, at which time he does a vidui, he confesses the particular sins that he is looking to atone for. Netilas yadayim, which is a reference to mayim achronim before birkas hamazon, before benching, and Geula l'tfilah. These are the three things that we should be connecting. Smicha to shchita, netilas yadayim to birkas hamazon, and geula l'tfilah. What's going on over here? So the Gemara goes on to say that anybody who is tokef smicha l'shchita, before they shech the karban, they do the smicha beforehand, ein psul nogei ba'osa karban, there will be nothing that will go wrong with that sacrifice. The Gemara goes on to say, anybody who washes their hands before birkas hamazon, ein hasatan mekatrig ba'osa suda, so nothing will go wrong in that meal. The kol mishu tokef geula l'tfilah, and anybody who is connects geula l'tfilah, ein hasatan mekatrig ba'osa ayom, so he's going to be he'll be free of the satan. He doesn't have to worry about the satan bothering him that particular day. It obviously raises many questions, and certainly there's only so much that we can explain in a few minutes at this time. But what he goes on to explain over here is these events, specifically bringing a karban, reciting Birkas HaMazon on tefillah, are events that require a certain perspective beforehand. And if a person doesn't have the perspective going in, so then he has to know there's only so much you're going to get out of it. So he says, when it comes to a person bringing a karban is a lot more than just going ahead and shechting an animal and having the particular avodah of that karban done in a specific way. It's about a person trying to, he's seeking atonement for a particular sin, he's trying to right his wrongs, and obviously there's a lot more personal initiative that must go into it, namely the vidui that precedes it. And what the Gemara is saying is, listen, if you put the vidui, the preparation beforehand, and that's your perspective, so then the karbon will be accepted. If a person comes to the table and he eats and he gets up and he benches, okay, but he's not going to relate to the benching in such a way, he's not going to relate to everything that's happening in the meal the same way, if he doesn't take a certain step back beforehand and prepare himself. And washing one's hands is a step, if a person internalizes the message of tahara, of purification in this way. Similarly, he writes, if you look at the second to last paragraph, he says, "Zehu gama ikaron shel smichas gula tefila." This is the main idea of smichas gula tefila. Hayiskashrus le'inyana shel hagula, which means forming a connection, a bond with this idea of redemption. He hanosenes le'tefila es mashma'usa hamitit. This is what provides tefila with its true meaning. Re'iyas hatefila kibitui le'tzrachim apratiyim bilvad. If one sees prayer as merely an expression of things that I need, this is a very narrow perspective and a very, very incomplete perspective, understanding of what davening is all about. What prayer really is about connecting with God. We are looking to become one with something which is truly eternal. And so therefore, the preparation, as we've been speaking about last week as well, all of these preparations for prayer, but specifically having this perspective as God being the one who, and the only one, who could redeem me as an individual, who could redeem us as a community, who can redeem the entire world from the pain and the suffering which we often endure. So with this perspective, and this historical perspective as well, which is really how we relate to the Gula in the davening, talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is sort of a prototype, if you will, of all the tzaros that we ever have. So with that perspective, and only that perspective, can we properly begin to pray to our Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the first thought that I'd like to share with you this evening is that this element of Smichas Gula L'Tfila is not a separate discussion, because it's clear from Chazal that if a person wants to truly succeed in connecting with God through prayer, so it could only be within the context of that which it's describing over here as Smichas Gula L'Tfila. That's the first topic of this evening. The second one is, as I mentioned to you, the idea of tefillah belachash. Now this is more of a practical issue in some sense, because it carries with it a very important halacha, as does the previous topic, but like I said, if you follow the script in shul, you can't go wrong. Tefillah belachash is something that people need to be reminded from time to time. That number one, when they daven, their lips should be moving, they should actually be speaking, and ideally they should hear the words that they are saying. However, and this is where it gets a little tricky, they shouldn't speak so loud that the person next to them can hear what they're saying. It's very difficult for some people to find that perfect balance. I know that because sometimes I'm standing next to them, and if you can hear the person next to you, that means that they're davening too loud. It should be the worst thing anyone ever does. It's obviously, relatively speaking, it's really it's not the biggest deal in the world. That being said, you know, we come to shul to daven as a tzibur because there are benefits to davening as a tzibur. But at the end of the day, our prayer is a personal prayer, and we all want our space, literally and figuratively, when connecting with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we should try to make every effort to respect the people around us, and certainly not to talk, but even to talk to God, even to daven in a way that can be disruptive to someone else, is something that we should try to avoid doing. This idea of tefillah belachash, of davening in a very soft undertone, in a whisper, where does it come from? It comes from Chana. Chana, who is seen by Chazal as being perhaps the paradigmatic model of what prayer is, and how a person should daven. There are actually many tefillos that are, many laws, excuse me, of tefillah that are learned from Chana. And the famous story, which is found in the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel, of course we read this each and every year as Haftarah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. So the Navi describes over there, introduces us to a man, Elkanah, who had two wives, Chana and Penina. Penina had children and Chana did not. And Chana, who was brokenhearted and was so frustrated with her lot in life, came to pray at the Mishkan. And it says, "Vatakam Chana acharei achla b'shilo v'acharei shaso ve'eli Yakov and Yosef al kisei amazuzah sechal Hashem." Eli was sitting there. V'hi marath nafesh. She was brokenhearted. V'tispalu Hashem v'achol tivkeh. She was davening and crying to God. V'tidor neder v'tom Hashem tzivakosim ra'o tireh ba'ani amasecha. She davened and she said, "God, if you see your maidservant in her distress, uzkartani, and you'll remember me, v'lo tishkachas amasecha, not forget me, v'nasatil amasecha zera anashim, and you'll give me children, unasativ l'ashem ko yimei chayov umora lo yaleo roshel." She took a vow that he will serve you, and he will be essentially a nazir. Mahaya ki hir besali his talel of ne'ashem, v'eili shomer espia. This is the important part of the story. She continued to plead with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Eli was watching her mouth. He was intrigued by the manner, the way in which she was dominating. V'chana himedaberes aliba. And Chana was, look so carefully at these words, fascinating words. Medaberes aliba, she was speaking to her heart, upon her heart, through her heart. Rak sifaseha na'os, only her lips were moving. V'kola lo yishameya, but her voice was not heard. So Eli concluded that she must be drunk. Eli said to her, he says, "Is this appropriate? How much did you drink? Stop drinking so much wine." She responded, "No, lo adoni, ishak shasruach anochi, I'm broken hearted, v'yayin v'shecha lo shasisi, v'shpochas nafshi lefnei Hashem, you don't know what you're seeing. I'm just broken and I'm pouring my heart out to God." From this story, from this particular pasuk which describes how Chana davened, Chazal learned no less than four halachos. And there are actually others, but from this particular line, four. The Gemara in Brachos, in source number 10, Amar of Hamnuna. Kama hilchosa gavrusa ikal amashma mihani karoi dechana. There are many halachos that can be learned. V'chana himedaberes aliba. What do we learn from there? Mikan l'mispalel so sheyichav in libo. Person has, as we spoke last week, has to have the proper frame of mind and heart. Rak sifaseha na'os. Mikan l'mispalel sheyachtoch b'sfasav. That a person has to articulate the words. And let's remember, that is a chiddush. Because if tefillah is avodah shebelev, then one would have expected, I don't have to say the words. Right? As long as I think it in my heart, that should be sufficient. So we learn from Chana, no. That to properly pray to God, I have to express myself, I have to be moving my lips. One cannot raise his or her voice, and although it doesn't say it explicitly in the Gemara, the way Chazal defined that is so that anybody else can hear you. You should be able to hear yourself. We see from here that if a person is drunk, he's forbidden to daven in such a state. Now, what does this mean? This idea of tefillah b'lachash. What does this say to us in terms of what prayer is, and what are we really trying to achieve by davening in such a fashion? So, on the one hand, as I mentioned beforehand, one could have argued that thought would have been an appropriate, if not the most appropriate, form of prayer. A person just closing his eyes and meditate. So, anybody want to suggest why that is not the approach that Chazal recommend? And just to be fair, if a person does at certain times in his or her life, whether it's in the context of formal prayer or not, choose to communicate with God in such a way, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't mean to suggest that God can't hear you unless you speak. Certainly not. We know that's absurd. And there would be nothing wrong with a person communicating. In fact, if a person, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if a person is too weak to move his or her lips, or finds himself in a place where it may be problematic to daven, so having the thoughts of prayer would be an appropriate resort under such circumstances. So we shouldn't think that it's worthless. But why is it not considered the ideal, given the fact that tefillah is avodah shebelev? Yeah.
Speaking it, you're kind of using your intellect and combining it with the guess by thinking it, you're also involving your intellect, but before just seems to me like maybe it would be one step further.
Right, so on one level, right, it does sort of concretize my thoughts, and it adds a little more formality to them, and our mind has a way of, you know, going all sorts of places when we think, and we can sometimes have these conscious or subconscious streams of thought which don't seem to have any order and clear definitions. When I speak, however, even if I'm not reading from a text, but certainly when I'm reading from a text, but when I speak, so it's a little more thought out, a little more clear, a little more direct. So, I guess one message is that God, or that Chazal want us to pray in a way in which we're somewhat clear about what we're saying, and it should be, and I believe that this may be part of this over here, it should be an experience in which we actually feel like we are speaking to someone. We are not used to, in any way, to the ability of being able to communicate to someone without actually speaking. Now, of course, as I'm saying this, I'm realizing, well, we can type to each other and write letters to each other and text to each other. That's true. But real, you know, face-to-face communication can happen, you know, through merely looking at someone. You can make a gesture, perhaps you can make an expression, and someone will get an idea of what you're feeling. But if you really want to, you know, convey a thought to someone, you have to actually move your lips. And as we said beforehand, coming to prayer in God is supposed to be a real conversation. And in that sense, it's important that one actually moves their lips. On the other hand, if I'm doing it loud enough that someone else can hear me, so I may, in addition to the fact that I may be distracting someone else, but even if it's my own home and nobody else is around, there is a tremendous benefit in davening in a very, very soft way. Because when a person does so, I believe it may be much easier for them to feel as if they are actually communicating with the divine. This is something that if you've experienced it, if you felt it, you know what I'm saying. And if you haven't, I can't necessarily prove it or explain it. But when a person can really you know, feel that sense of connection and feel as if they're standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and speak in such a soft way that it feels almost as if no one else could hear me except for you, that helps build a connection right there, which may be lost if it's so loud that the person next to me can hear. It sort of takes away from that very intimate and personal moment that I'm trying to create. It could be that that's why Chazal teach, based on this, that if a person is drunk, they can't daven, because when a person is drunk, they do exactly the opposite. They take things that are supposed to be personal and intimate, and they expose them, they share them, they put it out there, and it's not for public display. And the goal of prayer is to take everything that I have in my mind and my heart and to share it with HaKadosh Baruch in a way that's very meaningful, that's very intimate and private, but between me and God only. Yes?
I'll suggest two things in terms of first, the spiritual depth that we have, say the gray sheep is example of Noah. Noah often loses his control and is not able to initiate or sustain any type of proper action.
Right.
And of course, for those who, like Mahmoud Ashkenaz, will stress that our tefillah are in the place of the former Noah. A Kohen who was Shikur was not allowed
right.
To see the other
God. Right, there's no question. I mean, on the most simple level, obviously, a person is drunk, so, you know, he's not necessarily going to be in the state of mind. But I found it interesting that specifically from this story, you know, obviously it fits in well with the text. But on a deeper level, again, Chanukah is showing us that no, prayer is about speaking and articulating in a way in which something which, you know, would normally be, you know, perhaps for more, you know, public consideration, something that I would share with other people, is now shared between me and God alone. And very often, again, the way of a drunkard is to take things that are private and to, you know, thrust them out there in the public where they don't belong. I will mention, I'm not going to share any more with you now on this topic, but there are interesting approaches that I've seen as to why Eli was so shocked by this display of hers. And it's an obvious question that you may be all wondering is, if this is such, is this so basic and fundamental in terms of what prayer is all about, so why did Eli conclude that she was drunk? Why didn't he just realize that this is just a very, very sincere, brokenhearted woman who's crying to God? So obviously, he had a certain understanding of what the ideal prayer is, and it's very different than what Chana did, and basically, Chazal seemed to be taking an approach and saying, she was right. That the ideal prayer, you have to strike that balance. On the one hand, you're to articulate it, you're supposed to make a real and sincere conversation, but it should be one which is very personal and very private between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On a personal note, I will tell you, it may not work for you, but there are times that I find that when I say certain parts of the Shemone Esrei with a little bit of a tune, I don't like try to fit it to a tune like a person would want to do with Kedusha. And not to say that there would be anything wrong with that per se, but it's just nothing I've ever been inclined to do. But myself personally, there are times that if I articulate my words in such a way and try to just add a little more life, energy, flavor to it in that way, it's something that I have found personally has enhanced my tefillah. But it doesn't always work, and I'm not saying that it's going to work for anyone, for everyone, ever. But again, the idea is we should try to work with what we have to really feel that we can sort of, bridge that gap and try to make that connection. The last topic that I wanted to discuss this evening, and again, within the realm of this of these introductory issues, is a halacha, really, which is found, it's more of a minhag, but it's accepted as halacha, that we take three steps before and actually after the Shemone Esrei. If you look in source number 11, the Rama in Shulchan Aruch writes, the Yeshomim kesha'omed lehistalel, when a person stands to daven Shemone Esrei, yelech lefanav gimel psios, he should walk before him three steps, derech keru v'hagosha, l'davar shetzarech lasos, the way a person would bring himself close and preparing for something that he needs to do. In other words, when a person is about to embark on a very important journey, if a person is about to ask somebody a very important question, if a person has a very, very sacred task before him, so there's going to be a certain amount of preparation will go into beforehand, and then they will slowly, carefully, cautiously, and deliberately, go on their way. And the idea of the three steps that a person takes beforehand, says the Rama, according to Rokeach over here, it's an idea of sort of bringing myself close to some, greater force that, or some different dimension that I am looking to enter. In fact, the Kaf HaChaim writes that tzarech leilech la'acharav shlosha psios kadei sheyasi achakach gimel psios lefanav, that a person should take three steps back beforehand in order to facilitate these three steps, in order to enable these three steps to actually happen. If you have unlimited space, so you don't have to take three steps backwards, but in many situations you just have to be practical. If a guy, like over here, if I don't take three steps back, so there's no room to take three steps forward. The Mishubura actually says that it's not necessary to take three steps back beforehand, so if you don't have to, for practical reasons, it's not something you would need to do. But the Kaf HaChaim says it's an important part as well as taking three steps back in order to take these three steps forward. Now what's going on over here? What is this all about, the three steps? So I'd like to present two approaches this evening. The first one is what I'll call the push-up shot. I'm saying it's Pashup Shot not because it's so simple, not because it's necessarily anything that anybody here has ever thought of beforehand, or it could be you have, and that's why I'm calling it simple. On the most simple level, take a look at this beautiful, I think a very beautiful description in the Sefer Tfilas Yesharim. By the way, it's written by a machaber by the name of Eli Adler, who was originally from Atzmona, one of the communities that was destroyed in Gush Katif. And it was recommended to me a couple of years ago. I purchased it and was very happy that I did, because it's helped me a lot. But he writes over here the following. Source number 13. Hatfila hi mamad elyon. Prayer is this transcendent experience. Hamatzri chachone v'hizgaschus ne'usa. Keruv Hagasha. It's something that requires, again, a certain amount of preparation beforehand. Hatfilah nimtzeis b'makom acher. Tefillah is in another place. Ein hi hemshech yashir l'chom asher kadem la. It is not something which is just a continuation of everything that preceded it. L'masha asaknu b'lefnei tefillah. It's not just a continuation of that which I was doing before I davened. La'avira aschai hayom yom ha'kiyumim b'od ha'adam osek b'hova b'achshav. It's not just that a person sort of takes a break from whatever it is he's doing in the here and now. In tefillah, we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we express our yearning to connect with something much greater than us. We are looking to connect with some order, Hakol of the MS Olam Umlo, something which holds the entire universe together, Ula MS Nitzchit Ve'El Yonah, and to an eternal truth and transcendent truth, Hachobeket et Hamatziyot Kula, which embraces all of existence. That's what I'm trying to do when I daven. I'm trying to leave the space, the world in which I know it, and enter this different dimension. La'agia karoi la'mamad ha'tfila u'yitzor b'nefesh as ha'shinui ha'nidresh l'maver kodvi zem y'olam ha'kodem. In order for a person to properly prepare himself and to be able to make such a radical shift within himself from this world to another, ein zeh pashut klal v'ikar. This is not something so simple. In lo nigashin nachon alatu, if you do not approach it properly, alulim l'haktinu l'gamedosa, we run the risk of minimizing and diminishing the importance of prayer. And I find these words haunting because unfortunately very often that's what it is. We run the risk of our prayer becoming nothing more than just an extension of what we were doing beforehand. Meaning, I'm involved in something, I have what's on my mind, and I take that into my tefillah, and I get a little break, I get to think about things a little bit, but then I'm back into the world. That's not what it's supposed to be at all. It's supposed to be an exalting experience. We should view it as nourishment that is necessary for our soul in order for our soul to survive. You view it as air for the soul, just like you can only hold your breath so long. So our neshama has to breathe, and the way our neshama breathes is through prayer. And so therefore he says that the steps that precede the prayer should be understood as a means, and again, it's on the one hand it's nothing more than symbolic. It's what we put into it and what we're thinking as we take these steps, but we should understand that these three steps beforehand are symbolic of something which is truly incredible, and that is that we are really trying to leave the world in the way we know it and enter this different dimension. And to do so requires obviously a very, very focused and clear state of mind. There's somewhat of a deeper approach, if you will, to the idea of the three steps, and that is also cited in the Kaf HaChaim. And he says the following, and he's actually talking, why is it that we take three steps? As he said, three steps back beforehand. What's the idea of the three steps back? So he says the following: Posei la'achar Rav Gimel Psios Zecher leGimel Milin Shenisrachuk Yisrael Mehar Sinai B'Shas Matan Torah. The idea of the three steps back is reminiscent of the three Milin that Bnei Yisrael were distanced before they accepted the Torah at Har Sinai. What's going on over here? So you all heard the story. Bnei Yisrael come to Har Sinai, and Kadosh Baruch Hu begins to speak, and they were completely blown away. And the way Chazal described it, they were thrust back three milen, let's say for argument's sake, 3 miles, right? It was just such an overwhelming experience. Chazal say they died, they had to be revived. It was just too overwhelming. So right now, it's not my interest to focus on that particular moment per se. We don't have to get lost in the drama of that moment, but more on a symbolic level, what's going on over there? Why is it that the distance took place? Why is it that there was suddenly this major gap between God and the Jewish people at that moment at Har Sinai? And the answer is because they had come to this realization that they were not worthy. That they were not worthy. And therefore, the taking those steps back before, not before, and they were forced to, was, I'm not worthy. I can't be anywhere near this because it's too overwhelming for me. It's so much greater than I am. And along these lines, in the Sefer Yismach Yisrael, he writes, they call Adam Aposea Gimel Psius L'Acharav. A person takes three steps backwards before he davens, Kitzorach lachshov b'dayto kodem atfila. A person should think, Mi hu mahu? Who am I? What am I? Beheiz amatzav hu omed sof sof m'ruchok v'yashem yizbarach v'beheich anpim yokom b'fnei malka. Think, how could I possibly stand before the king? It's a joke. Me? But nevertheless, a person should not allow himself to remain in that state of despair. Rather, he should come to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to speak, wants to hear from me. Nobody's prayer is rejected. Even somebody who is less than deserving. And with this perspective, a person takes three steps forward. So it's a very nice idea. The three steps backwards sort of reminds me, mi ani, ma ani, who am I to approach you? But the three steps forward is HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, come. Come. Because this is for you, and this is exactly what I want from you. I see that. I have another idea on the sheet over here, which relates actually to the three steps that we take after the Shemoneh Esrei. At this point, I'm not sure necessarily that I would focus on this. We'll save it for another time. I'll tell you very, very quickly. I mean, obviously, you could take a look at it. It's here, and it's for you to read. But in a nutshell, he basically says that the three steps after davening is important because that's the message at the end of davening that we have to sort of get back into life. Rav Yochanan, I think, in the Gemara Brachos says, Halavai shispalo and kol yom kulo. Halavai, at a certain level, we could daven all day long. But we're not supposed to be davening all day long. We're supposed to live our lives and the things we need to do. So prayer is supposed to be this transcendent, incredible experience. But then there's that point we have to take the three steps back and sort of get back into life and hopefully be energized and inspired and refreshed through the experience of prayer, but not to remain stuck there. You know, we are sort of obligated to take it back with us. And actually, these are some very powerful sources, but we'll leave this for another time. I just want to add one more thing in conclusion, and I'll take a question. And that is on the last page of the year, even though I'm not going to present anything more than that's right here, Rav Schwab, in his book on prayer on page 411, it says over here, also mentions two other halachos which embody the thoughts that we have expressed in terms of our preparation for Shemoneh Esrei. The first one over here is the idea that when a person daven Shemoneh Esrei, he should be standing with his feet together. And the idea of a regel yeshara, one foot, we know is symbolic of being perhaps like a malach, like an angel. But the way he explains it over there is that when we come to daven before God, we should try to take our entire being without mixed agendas. The idea of a human being having 2 feet is sometimes I got one foot that's going this way and another foot that's going that way. We live very, very conflicting lifestyles, and we very often have many contradictions, internal contradictions, which we struggle with. That's okay, we're human. When we daven with God with our feet together, he said the idea over here is I try to take all the different parts of my personality, all the contradictions, all the things that don't make sense and normally don't blend together, and I take all of that and offer that as part, because that's me. That's me, and ultimately, Karov Hashem l'chol karov v'chol asher yikru'uhu be'emes. The goal of prayer is to be able to offer myself for who I am and to be real and not to try to put on a show, and that, he says, is the idea of 2 feet standing together. And he also talks a little bit, there's more to say over here, as we will, but he talks about the idea of bowing and how bowing is, first we begin to fall, which is very similar to the idea we just said before. And the three steps back is saying, I'm not worthy. The three steps forward is HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminding us, yes, you are. He says very similarly, when we bow, we begin to bow, it's falling down, saying, I'm not worthy. But lifting ourselves up is also, you know, sort of simulates this idea that, yes, I am, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, again, has invited me to engage in this discussion, this conversation, this communion with Him. This is all part of the, again, general introduction that I think is necessary and appropriate before we actually begin to open the Siddur, which we will do next week. So for those of you who are disappointed that we haven't yet begun to see Hashem Sivasai Tetach, we will begin next week with those words, and we'll begin to discuss the details of the brachos. But I ask you, as I did last week, to try to make every effort throughout the week to just so we can get more out of our time here together to, you know, integrate and to try to consider some of these ideas as we daven throughout the week and work on them. And the more we can consider them, think about them, allow them to sort of circulate in our minds and our hearts, so the more we will see over time that we actually get out of our tefillos. Thank you very much.